This is from the Gospel of John, chapter 11, verses 17 to 37. When Jesus finally got there, he found Lazarus had been dead for 4 days already. Bethany was, and that's an important thing, I will just quickly tell you. 4 days, the reason that's significant is that in the belief of the Jewish faith was that when a person died, their soul would linger for 3 days with the body, and then by the fourth day, the soul would have gone. So on the fourth day, this would have felt irreversible. The soul is already long gone. So it had been 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, only a couple of miles away, and many of the Jews had come, were visiting Martha and Mary, sympathizing with them over their brother. Martha heard Jesus was coming and went out to meet him. Mary remained in the house. Martha said, "Master, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Still, I know that whatever you ask God, he will give you." Jesus said, "Your brother will rise up." Martha replied, "Well, I know that he will be raised up in the resurrection at the end of time." You don't have to wait for the end of time. Resurrection and life, that's who I am right now. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. Everyone who lives believing in me does not ultimately die at all. Martha, do you believe this?
"I do believe, Master. I have always believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God who comes into the world." After saying this, she went to her sister Mary and whispered into her ear, "The teacher's here and he's asking for you." The moment she heard that, Mary jumped up and ran out to meet him. Where Martha had met him. And when her sympathizing Jewish friends saw Mary run off, they followed after her, thinking that she was on her way to the tomb to weep there. Mary came to where Jesus was waiting and fell at his feet, saying, "Master, if you had only been here, my brother would not have died." So apparently Mary and Martha had been saying this all along, and now they got to say it directly to Jesus. And when Jesus saw her sobbing and the Jews with her sobbing, the great sadness of the people touched deeply into his spirit, and he said, "Where did you put him?" "Master, come, we'll show you," they said. And now Jesus wept. Many mourners remarked to one another, "Look how much he loved Lazarus." Others among them openly questioned, "Well, if he loved him so much, why didn't he do something to keep him from dying? He opened the eyes of a blind man, didn't he?" I'll stop the reading there. Grief. Grief is something we all are acquainted with. You know, we grieve not just when someone dies, but grief is something we go through whenever we experience a loss. It can be, as scientists have measured, it can be as little as grief when we break a nail or get a haircut. We have a little bit of grief. What? Some of us grieve over a shave, thinking, if only. But also we grieve when we have big changes in our life, when we change schools, when we move from one home to another and we leave behind a neighborhood or a place where we've been and been for a while, when we change jobs, all the way up to the greatest of griefs is when we lose someone very close to us. So grieving is part of life. It's part of the journey. It's something that every one of us goes through at some point through in different measures, and we experience it differently. There's a gospel story we didn't read, but I want to share it with you before we get to looking at Jesus weeping, because I think the two stories have something to say or help us with. There's a story where Jesus is invited into the house of Simon, a Pharisee, who may also be Simon, who was a leper at one time. And
While he is dining at the table with Simon, a woman comes in to the house who has bought an expensive jar of some kind of ointment, and she has broken the jar open and she is pouring it over the head of Jesus, and she is crying at his feet, just pouring tears out of her eyes over his feet, and then wiping his feet dry using her hair. Now, in case you're wondering how she did this, they didn't sit at tables with chairs like we do today. They reclined at tables. The table would be here, and they'd be reclining with their feet away from the table. And there's reasons for that, but that's how they were. So she was back there away from the table. And Simon looks at this woman and looks at Jesus and says in his mind, if Jesus knew who this woman was, what kind of a woman she is, he would, and he was somebody who should know this, he wouldn't let her touch him. So he's a little disappointed in Jesus. And Jesus tells him a story. He says, Simon, I got to ask you, I'm going to tell you a story. There were two men who were forgiven great debts. One had a huge debt, let's say $5 million. I'll just make that number up. Forgiven $5 million. And the other was forgiven the debt of $5. Which do you think would love the one who'd forgiven him the debt more? And Simon said, well, the one who was forgiven the greater debt, I'm sure. And Jesus says, right. I came into your house, Simon. I come into your house, and you didn't give me a bowl of water to wash my feet with. And yet this woman has not stopped washing my feet with her tears and drying them with her hair. You did not give me oil for my head to anoint my hair with olive oil, but here she has given me an expensive perfume and anointed me, showing that she loves more. And so he says to the woman, says to you, daughter of Abraham, I want you to know your sins are forgiven. Of course, everybody gets upset about that because the only person allowed to forgive sins is God. Who does Jesus think he is? So they start wondering if he's blaspheming. But Jesus doesn't care. Now, the reason I want to tell you that story before we go into it is, why was this woman crying? What were the tears for? What do you think she lost? Let me tell you a little bit about her story. She was a prostitute. In that time, in that culture, women had no rights. They couldn't own property. They couldn't own a business. They couldn't make money. They were at the mercy of men in their society. If they weren't in a home with a father and brothers, then they would be married off and be under the care of a husband. Now, if there was no men to take care of them, they'd often end up adrift, having no way to support themselves. The only means to survive left open to them was to become a prostitute. Because men wanted one thing from them, but they didn't want to give them anything else. They treated women like objects, like property. And so this woman obviously had no males who would take her in, and so she was resorting to prostitution to survive. And that meant that, according to the law, she could be stoned. They could take stones and kill her. It was a death sentence. But they weren't really killing off prostitutes anymore. They had Roman law that kept them from doing a lot of things, but they could kill you in other ways. They could kill you by totally ignoring you, by cutting off any means of you feeling part of the community. There would be no women who would associate with you. You couldn't go to the well and have conversation with other women. You were basically all alone, isolated, rejected, treated invisibly, worthless, of no value whatsoever. I think the tears that she's crying are a mix of tears of grief over the loss of the woman she hoped she was going to be as a little girl growing up. No one, as a little girl, says, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to be a prostitute. They don't think that way. They're looking for life. They're expecting life to go the way everyone else's is going. But whatever the situation, whatever caused her to be rejected by the men caused her to have to live this way. So she was, I think the tears were a mix of grief over the death of the woman she thought she would become, and the hope she was placing in Jesus at that moment, someone who had been a friend to the sinners. So she's at his feet, and Jesus, how does he react to her? He accepts her offering. He accepts her gift. He accepts her touch upon his feet. And this is scandalous. And yet Jesus doesn't care. He's showing her that he sees her, that she's not invisible, that she's not worthless, that she has value in his eyes, value in God's eyes. She is somebody. Now let's go to Jesus crying, the weeping of Jesus at the tomb of Lazarus, often speculating on why is Jesus crying? Is he crying because Lazarus died? He loved him that much? That's what some of the people think. But Jesus knows that Lazarus is in a better place, but he also knows he can bring him back to life. He's not worried. Is he crying because everybody else is crying and they don't understand what's going on? I think part of the weeping of Jesus' tears relates to what the woman experienced at his feet. Everywhere Jesus goes, people are saying, "Heal my brother, heal my sister, heal my children, heal my spouse." Everywhere he goes, people want something from him. They want to get something that he can do for them. Feed us, take care of us. And I think Jesus, at that moment, even though death is a part of life and grief is part of the journey, he's weeping because people are not seeing him for who he is yet. I think he's feeling that isolation, that ache inside that says, people don't want to know me, they just want what they can get from me. I think the tears are grief that he's not yet connecting with people the way he wants to connect with them. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like people want to know you just for who you are or what they can get from you? That they don't really want to spend the time getting to know you as a person? Doesn't that happen at times? You felt that? Oh, you just had an itch? Okay. I think we go through that at times. I think there are times that people seem to call us. I mean, when you're a parent, kids, take notice of what parents sometimes feel. Sometimes we think that our kids don't really care about getting to know who we are. They just want to use us, you know, Daddy, can you get me this? Mommy, can you do this for me? They sort of just use us for what we can give them, and they don't want to spend the time getting to know who we are, what we feel, what we think about, what matters to us. And that can happen in so many other ways as well. So often our jobs can make us feel like no one wants to really get to know us. We're just working at a job where people use us for what we can give. And I think Jesus not only wept for himself, but he wept for all of them and all of us that day. As he recognized in that moment, perhaps, that we're so busy trying to do things, trying to accomplish things, that we don't take the time to know even who we are, let alone have others get to know us. And I think Jesus was grieving for that part of us and that's part of humanity that feels isolated, feels outside of the group, feels unconnected, feels, in a sense, dead to everyone. There's a saying on a tombstone in Ireland that, let's see how it goes, death, where's my book? Did I leave it out here? I left it up there. Let me get it, I'll get it in my mind here. Where is it? Oh, it's right there. Let's get it right. Yeah, I know. I wish I had this in my hands a moment ago. Okay. Death leaves a heartache no one can heal. Love leaves a memory no one can steal. You know, it's rare that we find those few relationships in our life where we are really known, where there's someone out there who has really spent time getting to know us. It can happen in a relationship between a couple. Oh, it's not that bad. It can happen in a relationship between a couple. You could have that friendship with someone who really spends that time. There's a very small circle of people that will really truly get to know who we are, that we can truly get to know. And when I hear that saying that was on the tombstone about death takes something that can't be healed, a heartache creates a heartache, but love leaves a memory that no one can steal. I think about what I witnessed in my parents. They were married for over 50 years before my father passed away. And as he was deteriorating with Alzheimer's and was becoming less and less able to communicate and even less and less able to see reality the way we see it, the one thing that strikes me about him is that he knew who he loved. No matter what his memories might have been, no matter who he thought we were or didn't know who we were, whether it was my brother and I or even my mother, especially with my mom, who would go and see him every day. He would love her every time she was there. He would just dote on her, with hold her hands and look into her eyes and just hold her, because he knew whoever she was, even as his memory was being taken from him, he knew that somewhere down deep, this woman he loved. He valued her. And when she was gone, people would tell her when she was not there, if she took a day off, he would be just miserable waiting for her to come in, waiting at the door for her to show up. Love leaves a memory that no one can steal. Even Alzheimer's couldn't steal the memory from my dad that he loved my mother. And so grief, as much as it challenges us, as much as it tries to take away from us things that we love, it can't take away what we love. Even the loved ones that have left us are still part of who we are. They live on inside of us as much as they live in the heavenly realm. And so Jesus wept. He wept because we grieve to be known. And that's something you and I have control over. Our priorities make us value sometimes what people can do for us. What can we get or be used by with other people? But God's value for us has nothing to do with what you can do. God values you just because of who you are. And if we could do that with each other, if we could look past the things that people say and do, and sometimes that are different than how we think and feel, and sometimes get us a little angry or a little upset, if we can look past that and just value people for who they are, then we're doing the same thing Jesus did for the woman at his feet. We're saying, I see you. I see you. And I respect and value and love you. And that's the greatest gift you can give to somebody else. Amen.